Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, August 31st, 2019. This is episode 1622. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Plex. With Plex, you can organize and stream your personal collection of movies, TV shows, music, and photos anywhere on any device. Plex is offering our listeners a 30-day free trial of Plex Pass, which gives you access to all the premium features. Just go to plex.tv/twit and enter the code TWIT, TWIT, to start your free trial today. And by Helm. Take back your email, files, and photos from your own data with Helm, a secure personal server that lets you own your online identity. Go to thehelm.com/techguy to save $50 off the Helm personal server. Well, hey, how are you? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here. It's Tech Guy time. Yeah, your worst nightmare. A geek with his own radio show. We're going to talk about tech today. I'll try to do it in English, though. This is where we talk about computers. Yeah, computers. What an old-fashioned term. Remember that Apple ad? What's a computer? She's working with a computer the whole time in the Apple ad. It's an iPad. She doesn't know what a computer is. So we talk about tablets, sure, computers, phones, smartphones, smartwatches, the internet. We talk about all that stuff. Anything with a chip in it. Technology, that's the subject. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's the number. Nicole DJ's here. She's answering the phones today. Kim went to Bali. I don't expect ever to see her again. Well, maybe she'll come back. I wouldn't. If it were me, I'd just stay in Bali. I guess she's going to come back, though. She's loyal. Nicole DJ filling in for her. So call her. Say hi. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website, we write everything down, you know, so you don't have to do it while you're driving around. That would be mean and dangerous. We write it down. We put it at techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And let's see what else. That's free, by the way. There's no sign up there. You can even leave comments. All of that's free and available. I think that's the whole thing. That's the whole kit and caboodle. Apple sent out invitations on Thursday. They like to wait to the last minute. They said a week from Tuesday, September 10th, something will happen. Okay. They said something about innovation. I think they already took the headphone jack out. I don't know what else they can do. Innovation will happen on Tuesday. You know what it'll be. It's going to be the new iPhones. And you know the rumors. You probably have heard the rumors. We don't know what it'll be called. Maybe the iPhone 11. And then there's this rumor that it'll be an iPhone 11 Pro, which could just be a name. Apple does, you know, that they have MacBook Pro. They have iPad Pro. I don't know what the iPhone Pro would have that's so very different. But we don't have long to wait. We are in the time frame where you would be foolish to buy a new phone of any kind right now. But I know people, you know, you break your phone. What are you going to do? Go without for a while? If you can, if you have an old one lying around, I would. If the new iPhones come out September 10th, the big national holiday, then, they'll be announced September 10th. The typically orderable, the 12th or maybe the 13th that Friday, and then they'll ship the 20th. So can you hang out for 3 weeks? If you can hang out for 3 weeks... Oh, yes. Keith in the chat room says, yeah, well, what about the Note 10 Plus? You could just get that. I guess you could. The rumor is the Pro will be like a Note. It'll have a stylus. I like the Note, but man, it's $1,100. And you can get a Galaxy S10 Plus, which is just, you know, almost millimeters smaller, not much. Doesn't have a stylus. But you can get that now. That's been pretty heavily discounted, a few hundred bucks off. So is it worth $300, $400 just to get the latest? He asks every year and then goes out and buys them. Yes. For me, the answer is yes. Then we're pretty sure we're going to see a new Google phone, the Pixel 4. Google, you got to catch up. Everybody's at 10 now, and you're back at 4. Pixel 4, that'll probably be October. IFA, which is a big conference that goes on in Berlin this week. I know it's Labor Day weekend, but, you know, this week is IFA. And they'll announce, I'm sure LG and others will announce phones there, Huawei. Google says, this is interesting, you've been following this crazy Huawei saga. Huawei is the number one phone manufacturer in China, number two phone manufacturer in the world, kind of neck and neck with Apple. Samsung's number one. And then, you know, because of the trade war or because of security, they can't seem to make up their mind. For one reason or another, they've decided we shouldn't be buying Huawei phones. And furthermore, no American company should do business with Huawei. Then they said, oh, you got 90 days. Never mind. Because I think all those American businesses like Qualcomm that sell chips to Huawei and for lots of money, billions and billions of dollars, said, hey, wait, give us a... So they gave them 90 days, and then they gave them another 90 days. But Google says, no, we're not going to play this game. Huawei will be announcing September 18th its new phones, the Mate 30. These are, by the way, Huawei makes very nice phones. That September 18th, the Mate 30... It's a 5G phone. Huawei's a big 5G company. And it's Huawei's first major flagship smartphone launch since they were blacklisted in mid-May. And even though there's another 90 days, Google says, we can't. We won't. So this next Huawei phone will not have licensed Google apps and services. It could have Android, but it won't be the Google flavor. No Google Search, no Chrome. No Google Play Store, that kind of stuff. Apparently, the government, that the reprieve they announced last week, the 90-day reprieve, doesn't apply to new products. So Google's saying, no. There is a loophole. They could look for a license, but they said, You know, you could see how hard that would be. Okay, we'll give it to you in 90 days. You know, the trade war goes on, and all of a sudden, no, you can't. Now what is Google going to do? It's too late. U.S. Department of Commerce, according to Reuters, has received 130 applications from companies. 130 applications from companies in the U.S. to sell goods to Huawei. None of them have been approved. I'm not going to say poor Huawei, but poor Huawei. They say, we're cool. It's funny, the Huawei phone sales went way up in China because the Chinese people are kind of patriotically saying, no, well, we'll buy them then, dumb America. So Huawei's actually not hurting that bad, and they say, we got our own operating system. We don't need them. We don't need them. Spam call filtering is coming. Those robocalls are driving you crazy. Verizon says, we're going to opt you customers into their call filtering service. I guess on select Android devices, Verizon will download a call filtering app to opt you in, but don't get your hopes up because they're going to try to get you to pay for it too. We'll give you a limited number or something. And then, but if you pay for it, I'm not clear because I went to look on my Verizon phone and they said, well, give us money. I said, I don't want to give you money. I just don't answer the phone. It's actually the biggest problem right now with robocalls is people aren't answering their cell phones. People now answer, according to some estimates, fewer than half of all the calls they get on their phones, cell phones. What do you do? If I don't know the number, like really know it, like it's my wife or my kids or something, I just don't answer it. I said, leave a message. I'll decide. And you know what? Robocalls, they don't ever leave messages, do they? They just don't. Pokemon Go is now Pokemon... No. No. Have you played that game? It's a fun game. I played it kind of obsessively, spent a lot of money on it, and I stopped. I stopped a few months ago. I said, I can't do this anymore. Started playing Harry Potter, the Harry Potter game from the same company, Niantic. I stopped playing that. The problem is these games, Harry Potter, Wizards Unite, Pokemon Go, and its predecessor, Ingress, all require you to walk around your town and then... look for things, And sometimes those things are in private property or people's businesses. So there was a class action lawsuit. An owner of an oceanfront condo in Florida, for instance, was confused, then infuriated when hundreds of players acting like zombies, walking around bumping into things, end quote, appeared on his property all hours of the day or night. What's going on, he'd say. We're looking for Pokemon. Another complaint, he had five different people ringing his doorbell, asked to be allowed into his backyard to catch Pokemon. So they settled. Niantic settled. We accept no blame or liability. We're going to pay $4 million to settle the case. Almost all of it goes to the lawyers. Of course, that's called class action lawsuits. But probably more importantly, Niantic will give people the chance to opt out. You don't have to be a Wizard's Castle or a Pokestop or a gym. You don't have to have Pokemon on your property if you don't want. There'll be a website you can go to. I got yelled at, Keith says in our chat room a couple of days ago. I was trying to get into a Pokestop in an alley. The store didn't like me there because their delivery truck was there. They thought maybe, you were stealing. Swanee says, my grandson walked into a light pole and knocked out his two front teeth. I shouldn't laugh. That's painful. Keith in our chat room says, I thought teenagers just walked around like zombies anyway. They didn't really need a game for that. If you want to join the chat room, irc.twit.tv. If you want to call me, 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm here for you, baby. I'm here to answer your calls. 8888-ASK-LEO, the Leo phone number special. Give me a ring. 90% off answers to your questions for the next hour. Call. She's got it.
I got it.
It's Nicole DJ filling in for Kim. Hello, Nicole.
Hello.
Are you ready?
I am.
Are you prepared?
Yes.
Are people being nice to you?
Yes, everyone's so nice here.
Yeah,
and the callers are really great too.
Yeah. You see?
Great
you
questions.
See? Good questions, smart people.
Yes.
You see? Nobody's saying Baba Booey to y'all or anything like that.
No.
Nope.
Not yet, at least.
Not yet. Now they will. Oh man, what did I do? Who should I start with, Nicole?
Don from Dana Point. He has a question about a follow-up question about his admin password that he's been using for Microsoft.
Okay. Thank you, Nicole DJ. I'm going to call you the phone whisperer, okay?
Okay. I like that.
You don't have to whisper. You just going to call you that. It's just a name. It's just a nickname. Okay. Hi, Don in Dana Point. Thank you, Nicole. Hi, Don.
Hello. I appreciate the call, being able to talk with you again. I've been listening to you for years, and this is the first time, my first call, first ring, and Nicole answered that.
Man, you hit the jackpot.
I did, and now even better, I get to speak with you again.
Well, wonderful to talk to you. What can I do to help?
A couple of weeks ago, I called in my Lenovo admin password.
Yes.
Stopped working.
And I was hoping that you'd be able to use that hidden built-in password that sometimes Lenovo
and
leaves on there.
You suggest I go to the Microsoft.com site, and the only option they had there was for paid support. And yeah. Then I went to the account.microsoft.com.
Yeah, there you go.
And lo and behold, my laptop wasn't there. My other laptop was, but not this one.
So that answers the question that we were worried about, which was, did you use a Microsoft account to sign into this Lenovo?
And that brings up the question. I'm looking at the screen now, and I went to settings, and now I have the option, do you want to switch to a local account?
Oh, so you did use a Microsoft account. That's puzzling.
Go ahead and use a Microsoft account. Okay.
So right. here's the thing. And by the way, the last time I set up a Windows computer, ironically, a new Lenovo desktop, which was a couple of weeks ago, they didn't offer me what they have for years, the ability to set it up with just a local account. You had to use a Microsoft account or an MSA, as they call it. And the advantage of that is if you forget your administrator password, you can do what you did, which is go to account.microsoft.com and recover it. But it sounds like something happened. Either you didn't use a Microsoft account or somehow it didn't get registered. Or here's my other fear. You used a different Microsoft account or you made a new one. Is that possible?
No, I have used the same name and email forever for Microsoft.
Isn't that weird then? It should that should show up then in that list of machines. Or you used a local account, which you could do until recently. But then it wouldn't say switch to a local account, would it? That kind of implies you're on a Microsoft account.
Yeah, so here's my follow-up question. I know you can't...
When you click switch to a local account, it's then going to say, okay, what's your Microsoft account? Did you try that?
No, I didn't want to do that because sometimes that can be a one-way trip, and I didn't want to do that before I talked with you.
Right.
Now, here's my question, because I know we have limited time. I know I shouldn't go to Best Buy and places like that, but...
No, that's okay. Where did you get it?
Costco.
Costco. That's the first place I'd go. They actually have pretty good support.
Yes, but not for stuff like this.
They won't help you?
Sorry with them, and they're more of help you get used to your computer type.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of mom-and-pop stores around where people will supposedly find your administrative password for you. What are the questions I can ask them to find out if they really know what they're talking about before I turn them loose on my computer?
So this is a kind of a perennial problem, which is how do you know which of these so-called tech guys is really a legitimate, honest tech guy? It's just like with a mechanic, right? It's like with anything else.
The problem I have when I got that password key from Amazon, not until I opened the instructions.
Yeah.
And open it up, did it say, this is not usable on Microsoft.com.
Thanks a lot. Don't do that anymore. Any tech that you bring it to should do whatever he's going to do in front of you. If he says, I'm going to need to keep it for a while, don't. Because then you won't be able to watch what he's doing.
Because you want to learn.
Yeah, not only learn, you want to make sure he's not doing anything that you don't want him to do. So, look at reviews on Yelp, try to find one that's good. Honestly, Best Buy is fine, but what you want to find, a shade tree mechanic may be a better choice because it's more likely he'll go, let's see if we can figure this out and sit down in front of you and do it. And that's kind of what you want.
Best Buy and the like are way overpriced.
The Geek Squad's pretty good, but... that even varies depending on how well-trained the particular tech you got. Many of them are very good, but not all of them. Same thing with a shade tree. I call him a shade tree mechanic, a shade tree computer guy. You don't know. But if it's a store that's been around a while, they've got good reviews, bring it in and say, hey, can you help me? And I'd like to watch you do it and see what he says. Don't buy keys online, as you've learned. That's almost always a scam. They only got you $5, so it's not the end of the line. I wish I could figure out what happened here. He could also help you wipe it and start over, and that may be the best policy. And then this time, write the password down. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, I want to talk a little bit about something that I know there's going to be some people here very happy to see. As a sponsor for the tech guy, Plex! I know, you Plex users? Yeah, they're nodding. A lot of people in our chat room are big Plex users. I was so thrilled when Plex came to us and said, we'd like to do some ads. I said, of course, I'm running a Plex server on my Synology NAS. Everybody I know is running Plex. But for those of you who are not, you're going to love Plex. It brings together all the media you want, music, movies, TV shows, into a single app. On every device you can use anywhere, no matter where you are. So if you've got a personal collection of TVs and shows and movies and music and photos, you put that on your Plex server at home. And as you're about, you run Plex on your phone and you can watch. It also, by the way, they've added now, the new Plex is so nice. I like the new interface. And they've added podcasts. Yes, we're on there. Web series and news, too. So you basically all your content in one place. If you get a Plex Pass, which, you know, I bought the Lifetime Plex Pass because I'm, you know, I just thought, I know I'm going to use this for the rest of my life, so I'm going to buy it. You can get as little as $5 a month. And with that, you get even more. Offline accessibility. So Plex allows you to download your movies, your shows, your music, and photos to the mobile devices. We do that before we get on an airplane. We look at our Plex server. We see what we want. We download it to the phone. And now I don't have to be connected. I can do it offline. This is really cool. You can watch live broadcast TV. You can even do DVRs. If you have a Plex Pass, you need an antenna and a tuner. And you just, this is the ideal cord cutting. Stop paying for cable and you get great TV and you can DVR it with Plex. They have premium music features, which I really like, including lyrics, custom curated playlists. The best thing about Plex is you just drop your movies and TV shows in, right? You just put them in the directory. It automatically organizes the shows into episodes and seasons. It does it all for you. The metadata. It's like suddenly your personal movie collection is like you've got a curator. Trailers, behind-the-scenes features, never-before-seen footage. It's easy to create multiple accounts, multiple users, so you can share your Plex. You could switch users easily with Plex Home. And yes, if you've got kids, parental controls too. Plex is awesome. Now, when you get the pass, you also get Plex Pass perks. Exclusive access to promos and discounts on partner products. And you get to use the newest features before anyone else. I was using the new UI for a while. I don't know. Is it available to everybody now? Is it? It's so awesome. Cut the cord. Save big. Plex is offering Twit listeners a 30-day free trial of Plex Pass so you can see all these premium features at no cost for 30 days. Plex, PLEX.TV/Twit. I'm not even a cord cutter, and I love Plex. I just think it's the greatest thing ever. It's the best media app out there. You hear, for years I've been recommending it, and now they're an advertiser supporting the Tech Guide podcast. Thank you, Plex. Go to plex.tv/twit, and your free trial begins when you enter the code TWIT, T-W-I-T. 30 days free of the Plex Pass. Scooter X says the new Plex UI finally got to the PS4 app a few weeks ago. Yeah, it's been slowly rolling out, so it sounds like it's everywhere. It is awesome. And as I Am Special UK says, Plex ain't complex either. It's true. Plex is super easy to use and so great. Plex, plex.tv/twit. Don't forget the offer code TWIT for your 30-day free trial of the Plex Pass. Plex! Yes, it's time once again for the hump to bump. the jump, which is a.k.a. Mr. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek. Hello, Scotty.
Hey, Leo. How you doing, man?
So, Cruise and Macquarie.
Tom Cruise, Christopher Macquarie. You remember that video?
Cruise and Macquarie. It sounds like my law firm, but no, yes, he's a famous director, and he's Tom Cruise. He was taking a break. I do remember it because it was taking a break from Top Gun.
Yeah.
And he said, what did he say? He said, please, fix your TV. Please.
Turn off motion smoothing.
I knew it was a bad idea when I saw it because it said, and if you don't know how, consult the web. That's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's like saying, please set your VCR's time. Please. No. Nobody.
Yeah. Yeah. No blinking zeros. Blinking 12s.
Yeah. So what's the problem? What were they complaining about and what's the problem?
Okay. Here's the problem. They were complaining about something that is found in most TVs these days, certainly all LCD TVs, and I think OLEDs as well, something that is often called motion smoothing. More technically, it's called frame interpolation. It results in an artifact called the soap opera effect.
Ew.
And what it does is this. Movies are almost universally shot at a frame rate of 24 frames per second.
Yes.
But TVs are based on a frame rate of 30 or 60 frames per second.
Yes.
And so they often, what frame interpolation does, motion smoothing, is it takes the 24 frames from a movie and it analyzes them. It takes a look at consecutive frames and it says, okay, this object's in motion. So I'm going to create a brand new frame that doesn't exist in the source content, and I'm going to stick it between these two frames, and I'm going to put that thing in motion kind of halfway between where they are, where it is in these two actual frames. And what that does is it makes that object in motion sharper. It looks smoother. So it's called motion smoothing. But it also brings about this thing called the soap opera effect. It makes the movie look like it was shot on video.
You know, you know, people who are listening to the show probably notice it when they go over to their parents' house.
Yes.
And mom and dad say, "What are you talking about? It looks great." And you say, yeah. "Mom, dad, it looks terrible."
Yeah. It does not look like a movie.
Yeah.
Now, we've gotten used to 100 years of 24 frames per second.
That's the film standard frame rate for movies.
And 99.99% of movies are shot at that frame rate.
And honestly, it's not that smooth. It's the lowest frame rate you could use and still look okay.
Yes, exactly.
So really, 60 frames or 30 frames, 120 frames, that'll all be better.
Yes, but it won't look like movies have looked for the last 100 years.
And this is the weird psychology of all this, is that we kind of... There's one of the reasons movies are magic is there's this suspension of disbelief and this kind of almost dreamy sense when you go into a movie theater. And it's because of the 24 frames a second.
Yes. And if you shoot at a higher frame rate, such as Ang Lee's Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, which she shot at 120...
That was disconcerting. The actors were in the car with you. they were right there.
Like you were in the limousine.
You were in the limo with them. Yeah.
Now, is that really what you want a movie to be? I personally liked it. I'm in the distinct minority.
And I suspect as time goes by, future generations will as well. Because it is more realistic.
Because we have digital technology now. We can do it easily. 24 frames a second was a limitation of old technology.
It saved us money.
Exactly, because you go faster, you use up more film, costs more money. Well, anyway, so this motion smoothing is turned on by default in most TVs today. And back in December, Tom Cruise and Chris McCrary put out a PSA, a public service announcement, and said, please, please, please turn off motion smoothing because it wrecks the movie that we spent so long and so much money making. Well, apparently the industry heard them, because this week there was an announcement from the UHD Alliance. UHD refers to basically the 4K that we have today in TVs. And this is an industry alliance, an industry consortium of TV makers, studios, directors, film directors. And they made an announcement this week that said, we've gotten together and we are going to publish a spec or a standard called filmmaker mode.
Oh, man.
And what filmmaker mode is very simple. It's designed to be super simple. Basically, there'll be a button on your remote that's labeled filmmaker mode, and you just press it. And when you do, it disables motion smoothing, frame interpolation, and it basically disables all the other quote unquote enhancements that most TVs have, like dynamic range expansion, edge enhancement, and things like that, because those all detract or take away from the image quality that these movie makers, directors, actors, all these people have spent so much time and money making this movie to look a certain way. It'll also adjust the color to make sure that the color is the way they saw it, more or less, as close as possible, when they saw it as they were making the movie.
Is there a standard? How can they know what the filmmaker wanted when they made the movie?
Well, they do know that filmmakers don't want frame interpolation.
We know that much, but color-wise...
There is a standard. There is absolutely a standard.
So when a film is made, the color grader goes in and tries to make it as close as possible to that standard?
Well, they have their no. Well, yes and no.
For instance, when The Godfather was made, the director of photography, I don't remember who it was, Vittorio Storaro or whoever, dragged the exposed film through tea to give it a little sepia-ish feeling. It was very subtle.
Or the Matrix. Whenever the scenes in the Matrix, they have this kind of greenish tint.
Yeah.
Will the button make it
look the way it's supposed to?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Because that greenish tint in the Matrix or that sepia look on The Godfather was done on the canvas of a specific color of white, which is called D65, and a specific range of colors, which is technically called P3. Doesn't really matter, but there's a specific range of colors and a specific color of white that if your monitor, if the thing you're looking at on your content on conforms to that standard, then you can do whatever you want. You can put a sepia tone over it or a green tone over it.
So you'll be getting the color, whatever the DP or the director
wanted.
You can do this right now. I mean, when I get a new TV, the first thing I do is turn off this interpolation. Part of the problem is every manufacturer has a different name. LG calls
it a different name for
True
and
Motion.
Usually,
Vizio calls it Smooth Motion Effect.
Yes.
Panasonic calls it Intelligent Frame Creation. Excuse me.
I know. It's like, what?
So the first thing I do is figure out where it is, turn that off, and then I put the color into cinematic, if there's a cinema.
That's the picture mode.
Those are two things you could do right now because there's no
filmmaker mode. Yeah. But dig this. The frame interpolation in particular is usually buried pretty deep in the menu. And how many consumers are going to go digging around the menu?
According to Vizio, 85% of customers don't change their TVs from the out-of-the-box settings.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And it's almost always turned on out of the box. So
exactly. Almost always.
Yeah.
I can't remember an example when it was by default turned off.
So when will these new TVs be coming soon?
Oh, we'll see. We'll see them at CES in January.
Nice. We'll see Scott Wilkinson at TechHive.com. He's a contributor there, of course, every week, talking about home video and audio right here. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the moment you've all been waiting for. I'm leaving, and Scott is taking over. All yours, Scott.
Thank you so much. Eric Duckman, great point. So unless the digital files are 24 frames per second, isn't this moot? Yes, it is, and I didn't get a chance to say that among the people at this press event this week was Rian Johnson, the director of Star Wars The Last Jedi. And he said, hey, I love frame interpolation for sports, but remember, sports are shot at 30 or 60, nowadays mostly 60 frames per second. And so you don't really even need frame interpolation. If your TV can do 120, which many TVs can these days, then yes, frame interpolation will insert one frame in between the actual frames of the 60 frames per second. But a factor of two like that, basically you're creating a new frame for every frame of the real thing, is much different than going from 24 frames to 60 or 120. and football and other sports that are shot for TV already are at a higher frame rate. So the frame interpolation doesn't really do the same soap opera effect. It already looks like video because it is video. So, yes, if movies were to be shot at higher than 24, if they were to be shot at, 48 wouldn't be that great. I'd prefer movies at 60 or 120. Then frame interpolation will be moot. You're exactly right about that. But that's going to take a long time, if ever. People reacted very badly to Billy Lynn, Ang Lee's movie that he shot at 120. I'm extremely interested to find out how people are going to think about Avatar, the Avatar sequels, which I hope finally come out. It's been, 10 years since Avatar came out, and James Cameron is apparently working on four sequels all at once. But he has said many times that he's going to shoot them at high frame rate. And I don't know whether it's going to be 48 or 60 or 120, but it's going to be something higher. The only other example I can think of a movie that was released were at least two of the Hobbit movies, which Peter Jackson shot at 48. And people complained about that, too. People complain about high frame rate above 24 frames per second because they say it doesn't look, quote unquote, cinematic. And it doesn't. They're right. But the question is, for me, how important is that? Well, Leo made a great point in our segment about how 24 frames per second kind of puts you in a little bit of a dreamlike state. It helps with your suspension of disbelief. If the picture on the screen looks too real, then you sort of know it's not real. It's a weird, ironic, oxymoronic kind of thing. But if it looks too real, you know it's not. You know it's a movie or it's an artificial image that you're looking at. I guess VR, 60 or 120 frames per second in VR would be better because you're supposed to be immersed in this environment. But if you're looking at a screen, you know you're looking at a screen. And 24 frames per second kind of glosses over or obscures the fact in a way that you're looking at a movie. And that lets you get deeper into the movie, weirdly. So it's a very interesting question. And these film directors and actors all said, you know what? We want to turn frame interpolation off because that's how we saw the movie. Also, we don't want edge enhancement. We want the color space to be right the way we saw it and all this stuff. So it's a very interesting question.
I'm amazed that the TV manufacturers capitulated on that. Are you going to stick around for the top?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Todd in Los Angeles. Hello, Todd.
Hi. Thank you.
Come over to the phone. Let's talk, my friend.
Yes, thank you. Well, I wrote everything down here so that I won't digress. I got a PM message from a friend on Facebook. It says, is this your video?
Uh-oh.
And my Facebook profile pic is there. And it says, next to it, it says, your video, 60,000 views. And so I clicked on it, you know, innocently. I shouldn't have done this, but clicked on it. It says, sorry, that content is no longer available.
Oh, this is bad.
Now,
this is, by the way, cautionary tale for everybody listening.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So beneath my pick is a website address in very little letters.
Yeah.
You know, it's blah, 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 .facebook.com. I clicked on that, and bingo, there's my Facebook page with the username and the, hey, don't forget, did you forget your password? You can change it right here. So it's meaning that anybody can access this. The site, however, the site was in Czech, you know, the language. Czech.
So what they were hoping you would do at that point is log in. And they would then capture your password, I think. So there are a couple of ways people get scammed online. This is classic. I've even told people for years, when your friend sends you the video that says, oh, you won't believe what you did last night. And you go, what do you mean? I was home. What? And you click the video because you got to see. And different things will happen. Sometimes it'll pop up and says, oh, you need Flash to watch this video. And you go, God, I got to see this video now. And you download what purports to be Flash, but it isn't. It's a malware from a malware site. In this case, it sounds like the video didn't play. That's normal. And there was a link. And you clicked that link. Are you sure it was Facebook.com? That's the big question.
It was blah, 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 dot Facebook.com.
Okay.
And the weird thing
Are
is,
you sure, though? That's the question. And the reason is it might say that on the page, but it may not actually be a link to Facebook. In fact, I'm almost certain it's not a link to Facebook.com. If you hover your mouse over it on some browsers, the status line will show you the actual link. Or you could right-click and copy link. And then paste it into, not into your browser, whatever you do, but paste it into a notepad or something and see what the link is. Almost certainly it's not Facebook.com. If it is Facebook.com, it's benign. But remember, what you see on that page is not necessarily the link you're getting when you click it.
Okay, now I'm confused because when I enter that email address, or that website address, what comes up is my website, my Facebook page, but in the bar above, you know, that shows the HTTP, it says Facebook.com. So, and it's in Czech, but down at the bottom, I didn't even realize this, down at the bottom of the page, because you can click on a whole bunch of different languages, English being one of them. And when I click on that, it translates the page. And the page is like, hi, this is Facebook. Set up a whole new account, you know. Or click on this, because if it's your account and you forgot your password, you can fix it.
Okay. We're going to make this a cautionary tale. Do not ever, ever, ever again click on any of those links. Okay? You're a nice guy. You're a trusting guy. Your friend wouldn't have sent you anything malicious. First of all, it didn't come from your friend. Second of all, because it didn't come from your friend, but instead a Czech hacker, every one of those links is suspicious. It is very easy in a web browser to put on a page that looks exactly like Facebook, even says it is Facebook. It's not. And you can't really tell. In order to make sure, you'd have to go through some steps. For instance, looking at the certificate under the padlock and seeing if the certificate says Facebook.com. Now, if the certificate says, and by the way, it's not Facebook.com.ru or Facebook.com.hackers.com. There's lots of tricks you can play with website addresses. And so you've got to be super careful. In fact, I would say, unless you really know what you're doing, and most people do not, your best bet is close the window and go on with your life. Don't do anything. What they almost certainly are trying to do is one of two or three things. We just learned, for instance, Google just discovered this, that for years there have been websites out there that look normal websites, but they're looking for people with iPhones to go to that website because they will then hack your iPhone. This has been going on for years. Google found this. So one thing that they're going after is to take you to a malicious site. Might look like a normal site, but underneath the surface, this is the problem. Web pages are very powerful now. They can run code on your computer. They can run a program on your computer. They can run JavaScript. So under the surface, all sorts of things could be going on that you don't know about. One of the very common things to do, and bad guys can buy these on the open web pretty easily. They have kits that have a bunch of exploits. Metasploit is one of these. They're a bunch of exploits, bad tricks to get into people's computers. And they buy these Metasploit toolkits, and they put them on their page, and they make it a normal-looking page. Maybe it even looks like a Facebook login. Maybe it looks like a Facebook login page. Who knows what it looks like? Maybe it looks like the New York Times. It can look – any web page can be duplicated easily, including, by the way, your Facebook page. So they put these exploits on there, and you go there, and if there's any – if any bit of your computer is vulnerable – now, if you keep it up to date, it probably isn't. An antivirus does not protect you, but if you keep your system up to date, maybe it's not vulnerable, unless they found something new that nobody knows about, which happens also. That's called a zero day. So this is why you just don't click on these links. So you go there, and it tries to infect your computer. Maybe you're lucky. Maybe you're completely up to date. There's nothing on there that's new. You didn't get infected. Then they might try some other things. For instance, putting a page that looks like yours saying, oh, you forgot your password. Well, you can make a new one here. Enter your old one. Oh, yeah, well, I guess so. So you enter your login and your old password. Except that isn't a Facebook page saying, let's make a new password. And this is what I think you got. This is a page the bad guy has set up to look exactly like your page. And he now has your password because you entered it. No, I'm changing my password. I didn't enter it. I changed my password. No, you didn't. You gave him your login password. So don't fall for this, because this is how. Now, honestly, in most cases, nobody wants to hack your Facebook page. That's the kind of childish vandalism that doesn't happen so much anymore, because there's too much money in this. What they much rather do is get credit card numbers out of you. Maybe get you to pay for a bogus support contract. There's all, you know, they want money. Maybe they put a Bitcoin miner on your system. This is very common nowadays. Remember we heard about the woman who hacked Capital One? Turned out what she was doing wasn't trying to get people's credit card numbers from Capital One. She was trying to put, in fact, she'd put Bitcoin miners, this is software, running on 30 other servers, including Capital Ones, to make money because it would generate Bitcoins and send out the money. It doesn't make a lot of money, but if you put it on a lot of servers, it might. So the days of somebody saying, oh, yeah, I want to – well, it happened yesterday. Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, his account got hacked. That was an example of vandalism. These guys, they thought it was a joke. Funny, ha-ha. What was the name of the exploit group? The Chuckles Syndicate or something. That was for fun. That doesn't happen to you anymore. What happens now is they're trying to get your money somehow or make money on you or put ads on your system or put malware on your system that'll generate ads or that malware they can use to attack other systems and blackmail them. It's all about the money. So, job one, do not click on these things. Now, you probably didn't enter anything in. You might be okay. It's kind of beyond the scope of what I can do on this show to fix it. If you feel pretty good that nothing happened, you can go on. Otherwise, you might want to get your system checked for malware. So because I was running out of time, I put you on hold there, but I could continue to talk. So tell me a little more about what you saw there, because I'm curious. So you saw, yeah. We're not on the radio anymore. I'm off the air. So you saw a page that said, "I forgot my password."
Port this to Facebook, which is a joke. I'm trying to call LifeLock because you know the damage is done. I mean, these guys have my whoever it is, anybody. Like you could go on there now and
did
find
you
my
log in?
Website. Yes.
So you gave them a
log. Because
see, I don't think they want your. I don't think they want your Facebook account. Has your Facebook account password been changed?
Oh, I've changed it like 12 times between yesterday and now when I discovered this.
Then don't worry about it. And nothing weird was posted on Facebook.
Well, no, but when I go into that site again, which maybe I guess
don't
I shouldn't
ever go into that site. Why are you going back to that site? Don't
because
touch.
I'm scared. I'm
no.
worried. I'm
every time you go back to the site, they're trying to hack you. Don't go to that site anymore. That's a bad site. There's nothing to report. First of all, there's nothing to report. What your only job at this point, you did the first thing, changed your Facebook password. Probably wasn't necessary, but at least you did it. That's good. Now you want to see if your computer has somehow been hacked. It probably hasn't because I don't think that was a complete hack. But you should check. Run so do you have antivirus on there? Run that. It's Microsoft Windows 10?
Yes.
So if you hit the Windows key and type MRT, it'll open Microsoft's malicious software removal tool. Do a thorough scan with that. If it all comes up nothing, you skated. You're fine. There's nothing to report here. Because a million other people had the same thing happen to them. There's nothing you could do about it. Your only job at this point is to make sure you didn't get hacked. But I don't think you did. But don't keep clicking on that link. That's a bad link.
I know, and it's that's why I was trying to call you.
No, I'm glad you did. Now, other thing to do, you didn't use that original password anywhere else, I hope.
No.
Okay. That's good, because that's one thing people often do, is they reuse passwords, and now you see why that's a potential problem. All right, I think you're okay. But don't keep clicking on that link. Scott, back to you.
Hey, thanks.
Yep.
Good advice, by the way. So the chat room has been having a lively discussion about this frame interpolation. Before we get back to that, though, I want to just quickly address Tech in San Diego wrote, will a T connector work to connect two laptop audio jack outputs to one set of speakers? No, it will not. A T connector is a splitter. So it takes one output and splits it to two to go to two different sources. To take two outputs and combine them to go to one source, you need a mixer. You need some circuitry. It can't be a simple Y or T connector. If you do that, it could lead to some electronic unfortunateness. So don't do it. So let's see. Key 43 asks, how does this affect video games? Each video game has a different frame rate. Well, I don't know that they each have a different frame rate, but they do use different frame rates than movies, certainly. And it shouldn't be a problem. And as someone else here said that, you know, video gamers, yeah, Nomad said video gamers like 60 or even 120. And that's true. They like the higher frame rates because they're not conditioned to think of or to see 24 frames per second as the only way movies can really be shown. I'm not of that camp. I mean, I understand why 24 frames per second, you know, it looks blurry. Motion looks blurry and juddery. But people have become so used to it. And there is the issue of, you know, it helps you suspend disbelief, kind of puts you in this dreamlike state like we were talking about before. But I never lose sight of the fact that I'm watching a movie and I would rather see sharper motion. So I liked the look of Billy Lynn and I liked the look of The Hobbit. And I will certainly go see Avatar when it comes out. Somebody here, Scooter X, said he has some friends who are working on the Avatar sequels and they can't talk about it. But apparently Avatar 2 will come out in 2021. And Avatar 5 is scheduled for 2027. Good God. And they will undoubtedly use higher frame rate. I actually know somebody who works on it as well, and he can't tell me anything. She can't tell me anything. So anyway, that's, and Loquacious says, I hope he comes up with more original storylines. I'm totally with you. I am so totally with you on that. I was disappointed in Avatar for that reason. It was like, this is not that interesting a story. Really beautiful looking movie, but not that interesting a story to me. So that is the answer to that. Let's see. I had a bunch of other interesting comments here. Let me make sure I can find them. let's see here. Oh, did I guess I went past it. Oh, did you see that Disney Plus will use Dolby Vision instead of HDR 10 Plus? That's interesting. I hadn't seen that. Beatmaster says, wow. Okay. Well, that's good. Good to know, anyway. Dolby HDR 10 Plus, bad for HDR 10 Plus and Samsung, who are the Samsung's the big promoter of HDR 10 Plus because they don't want to pay Dolby for Dolby Vision. But Disney Plus will be using Dolby Vision. That's very interesting. Very interesting. Scooter X, I did not take advantage of Disney Plus founders' discount that expires on Labor Day. I'm not sure I'm going to subscribe to Disney Plus. I don't have kids. I don't have grandkids. So, and there are Disney movies that I like, no question. But I'm not going to pay for the service to watch those few movies. And Friendly Manitoba, any thoughts on guys who said there was no OLED screen burn after 6 months of use, 20 hours a day? I suppose it depends on the content. If they were not showing news channels with a ticker along the bottom for 20 hours a day, then I'm not that surprised. But if they were and there was no screen burn in, then I would have a problem with that because that ticker at 20 hours a day for 6 months, I think would cause burn in on an OLED TV. Let's see here. Mike won. Good. I thought what made it cinematic was that it was in a real theater that you're watching on a projector emitting light on a screen as opposed to TV monitor where the picture is scanned through the screen. That's another good point. Certainly the best way to get a cinematic experience at home is with a projector and a screen in a home theater. That is absolutely true. Coming to the end of our time here together, I'm sorry to say, but it's been great fun. In fact, I hear the music, the magic music.
All right, Scotty, have a great day.
Thanks, you too. See you next week.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater. digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, malware, hijacking. I feel so bad for our last caller, and the problem is I only have a few minutes to talk about anything, but I kind of want to come circle around again to this topic. So, best I understand, and he was freaked out, and I don't blame him. He gets a message on Facebook Messenger on DM saying from a friend, by the way, really important. And I hear sometimes security experts saying, "Oh, be careful of email from someone you don't know." No, that's not the problem. The problem is the email from somebody you do know. That's the problem. So it came from a friend. That means he trusted it. That's why hackers do that, right? First of all, it's important to understand what's going on with the bad guys that are trying to get you. As I said, unless you're the CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, most of the time they're not harassing you specifically. It's rare that we get targeted as individuals. If you're a spy... a diplomat, you know, if you're a big shot, okay, maybe you're getting targeted by an individual as an individual. If you're a corporation, maybe you're getting targeted as an individual. But most of the time when you and I get attacked, we're getting attacked as pawns in the game, as a faceless masses, because the bad guys these days aren't interested in vandalism. That's so old hat. The old days where you'd get hacked and they go, ha ha, gotcha. No, no one does that anymore. There's too much money in it. What they're most often trying to do is get ransomware on your system. Even then, as individuals, we're kind of a little bit safer than we used to be because these ransomware guys have realized, oh, no, the real money's in city governments, corporations. That's where you can ask for millions. Leo's hard drive, maybe you'll get a few $100, not a, you know, maybe one Bitcoin, maybe. But if you go after the city, Clear Lake, Florida, and you get, you know, you can get probably a few $100,000. So that's good. That's deflected the hacker's attention from us. Nevertheless, that's still floating around, ransomware. Also, the idea of, well, if I could get 1,000 computers, they call them bots. If I get 1,000 computers in my botnet, I can then harness their power to attack systems. And the way that works, Super Bowl's coming in January or I guess early February, and you're a bad guy. You call up big sports book. You say, hey, it would be a terrible thing if your website was to go down on Super Bowl Sunday. But if you give me $1 million, I shall protect you. It's the old protection racket, right? How could their website go down? Well, I happen to have a botnet of 150,000 computers that are all going to try to get into that site at once. That's called a distributed denial of service attack, or a DDoS. That's a good one. It happens every major sporting event. We're going to bring your site down on that key day where all your money is coming in, right? They also may be trying, sometimes they're trying to steal your stuff like your credit card numbers. Usually that's not the case, but sometimes. Depends on, you know, kind of depends on, you know, how big time the hacker is. Nowadays they're going for the big bucks. This new thing that we're seeing a lot of, it's kind of drive-by attacks. You go to a website, you don't realize it, that website's been compromised. When you visit that site, it probes your system for weaknesses. And if it can find one, among other things, it would install what we call a Bitcoin miner or a cryptocurrency miner on your system. What's that doing? Well, it's using in the background. You don't even know it's happening. It's stealing some of your cycles in the background, trying to create cryptocurrency. And the problem is these days it takes pretty powerful computers to make new Bitcoin. But if you had 100,000 computers, maybe you might make some money off of this. So they put cryptocurrency miners. This is becoming a bigger thing now. So it's things like that. They're trying to make money off you. They're not trying to humiliate you or embarrass you particularly. They're trying to get money out of you. Lately, there have been kind of blackmail emails. You might have gotten one that said, hey, I saw what you were doing last night. I got a video of it, and I'm going to give it to all your friends if you don't send me money. That's another good one. By the way, they don't have a video of you last night. You don't have to worry about that. In his case, from what I could piece together from what he was describing, it sounds like it was a very simple attack. He got sent, and this has been happening on Facebook this week. That's why I'm not surprised to hear it. He got sent a message from a friend saying, I have a video. The video's not there. There's no video. But what you get instead is a link. Do not click that link. In fact, do not click that message. Be really careful when you get links or something to click in a message, even from a friend, especially from a friend or someone you know. But don't click those, please. And when friends start sending you links to stuff, say, hey, please don't do that. Now, I know we all do it. I do it. So if you think, well, that's going to be pretty good. If it's a YouTube video, you'll know. But you got to learn how to look at a... Sometimes what's printed on the screen isn't what you're actually clicking on. I say YouTube.com, and it's really hacker.ru. It's not necessarily what you're clicking on. So, you know, in some browsers, you can learn what your browser does. In many browsers, if you hover the mouse over that link in the status bar at the bottom, it'll show you what that link actually leads to. That's useful. If they don't match, that's a cause for concern. Generally, we don't want to click links in direct messages or in email. That's almost always hazardous. Even though many of them are not, it's just dangerous. And you can sense it, too, because one of the things hackers want to do is create a sense of panic and emergency. They don't want you to think, right? They want your lizard mind to take over. So they'll say things like, oh, man, this video. Did you mean to send this out? That kind of thing. And you go, what is he? Like, click that fast. See what it is. No, don't. That's when you know. They're trying to play you. I don't want people to be cynical and suspicious, but there's a lot of this going around these days. So it was my real concern, and I, you know, after hearing what happened, he kept clicking the link to see what was going to happen. Don't stop. My real concern was perhaps he gave him his password, or more likely they wanted you to go to a site where while you were busily trying to change your Facebook password, that site was trying to infect your computer, probing your computer for weaknesses. This is why the other half of good security, besides not clicking links, not taking files from strangers, that kind of thing, is keeping your system up to date. Because you won't have any of those weak links, those security weaknesses, as long as you're keeping everything patched. So that's my advice to you. I don't know if something bad happened to him or not. It's really hard to know if you feel like, well, I'm pretty sure they got something on my system. You know, that's hard to know, and it's even harder to fix. And so, you know, I know people will tell me, and they'll tell you, go get Malwarebytes. Good program, fine. Go get Malwarebytes, run it, it'll get rid of everything, and then you're good to go. Yeah, no. Maybe you'll find some things. Maybe you'll get rid of some things. But you don't know if it got everything. That's the real problem. The only way to be sure, if you think you've been infected, and I know this is a pain in the butt, is back up your data, wipe off your hard drive, format it, erase it completely, reinstall Windows, put your data back. And next time, don't click the link. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. If this happens to you, call me. We'll talk you through it. We'll talk you down. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Website has a lot of resources. We put everything up there, including audio and video of the show after it's over. That's techguylabs.com, and it's free. Leo Laporte, got my party shoes on, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Bill in Goleta, California. Hello, Bill.
Good afternoon, Leo. How is things in the wrist-wrestling capital of the world?
Yes, you know that about Petaluma.
Well, yes. Because of Charles Schultz and Snoopy.
And Snoopy, that's right. Yeah, I don't know. I think the wrist wrestling championship has moved on, but for many years, this is where it happened.
Moved to Vegas or something.
Yeah, somewhere where there's real money in wrist wrestling.
Anyway, my question, on my iPhone and iPad, and with AT&T, maybe it's something to do with them, but every day at 3, 6, 9, and 12, day and night, data goes out on the data line on the phone. And sometimes it's kilobytes.
That's hysterical.
Sometimes, like today, it was 300 megabytes.
That's like the AT&T guys having a Dr. Pepper and downloading all your files.
I don't know what's happening, but is Apple doing that or is AT&T doing it?
No, it's
every day.
It's your device.
On all of my devices.
It's a bunch of data at a specific time is going out.
Yes.
That's very interesting.
Every day. Sometimes it's kilobytes, sometimes it's, you know, megabytes. And like today I looked and my son, who uses a lot of data, maybe 13 gig a month or so, it was 300 megabytes.
Huh.
And I don't know, you know, when we were had their 15 gig plan, it seemed like it got really close to that.
How do you know? How are you seeing this happen?
I'm going to the bill and I'm clicking on the bill and it says data and it's there.
Yeah, okay. So it could be that AT&T is just combining multiple downloads into one thing at three times a day. I'm not sure I would trust.
No, it's six times. Well, it's every 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah. So their billing system isn't watching by kilobyte by the minute. Every few hours, because otherwise it would have your bill would be quite long if it broke it down by the minutes, right? So it's my guess that that's spread out actually throughout those time periods. But there are ways to check this. Your router may have software that tells you how bandwidth is being used. There's software you can run. I mean, that's a lot. But I'm almost certain.
That's the problem.
You could ask AT&T and say.
It's not the router.
I understand. You're looking. But here's what's happening. You're looking at your AT&T bill, and instead of giving you the breakdown of download by the minute, which would make that bill extremely long, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're breaking it down in 4 or 5 hour chunks. They're saying in this chunk, I would call them if you want to know. Chances are the person you get on the phone will have no clue. But maybe if you escalate it, somebody will tell. Oh, yeah. That's how we do our billing. It makes sense. They're not going to give you minute by minute downloads. They're going to chunk it up. So in the hours between
300 megabytes, that seems like an awful lot.
Well, I'll give you what those things could be. And again, it's possible to find out for yourself, but it's kind of a geeky endeavor, but you could do it. But your phone might go out and update the apps. Those apps are big. When you're doing app updates, that could take quite a while. So you're saying AT&T, but they're your internet service provider, right? This is your Wi-Fi.
No, it's Wi-Fi is Cox, which, you know, won't go into that.
Oh, okay.
But this is strictly data, and I have another iPhone or another iPad that doesn't have data hooked up, and there's nothing.
Yeah, of course
obviously,
not.
Obviously. Because
you can't get granular information, but you could look at your phone and look at your iPad and look at the usage information in the settings, and it will tell you how much per day it's using. It's not 300 megabytes sounds like more than it is. It's not that much. So I'm going to give you a few of the things that are hundreds of megabytes. App updates, email,
right?
Surfing. Those pages are bigger than you think. Nowadays, and this is one of the reasons people run out ad blockers, believe it or not, pages are many, many megabytes because there's lots of ads and content and images and JavaScript that's being downloaded. So it could just be that. Now, I don't think that it all happens at those hours. That's chunked up. But it could be in that 3 to 5 hour period, 300 megabytes, easy. 10 websites, a little bit of app data, some email, and boom, Bob's your uncle. So I know it sounds like a lot. Here we go. Scooter X, he's a master at the Google. AT&T often posts your data use from the previous day's use in batches, often at 3 hour intervals as noted on our bills. So that's why you're seeing it those times. That's everything for the 3 hours prior. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, I do, but if I'm there and it's got Wi-Fi, why doesn't it use Wi-Fi to do this?
Yeah, you're right. So this is something you can control, and I would recommend. If you go in the settings, in the cellular data section of your settings, you can say whether an app can use cellular data or not. And so I would go through those and turn off cellular data for stuff that you don't need as you go out and about. Now, maybe your Wi-Fi is inconsistent, and so sometimes phones will do this. I don't think iOS does it, but I know Android phones will sometimes do this, where they'll combine cell data and Wi-Fi data to give you a more reliable and faster connection, things like that. So go through your settings on your iPhone and your iPad. Look at the cellular settings, and you can go app by app, and you can disable cellular access. I do this when I travel, for instance, because I don't Maps. I want to have cellular access because I want them to work out in the real world. Uber, I want to have cellular access, but there is absolutely no reason why that game, you know, needs cellular access. You know, or in the variety of things that you can do. So I would look in your settings and disable it, especially for your kid, because you're.
Yeah, that's a lot of data.
That's a lot. It isn't. It sounds like a lot of data. You and I go back to the days when a floppy disk was 1.5 megabytes, 1.44 megabytes. So 300 megabytes, that's a lot. That's 20 floppy disks. But nowadays, one image is easily, you know, can be, you know. So things have changed a lot. Don't be surprised. But since you are paying for cellular data, you're paying more than you are for your Wi-Fi. Disable cellular data for any app that doesn't need it when you're out and about. And I think that'll fix this problem.
That sounds like good advice. Thank you.
Well, there you go.
I have another couple of questions. When you were at KFI, did you ever run into Bruce Williams?
I did not. I don't know if he worked out at KFI at the time. He was syndicated by the time I was there.
He was back in Jersey or something.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah, great guy, though. I listened to his show, of course, religiously.
Oh, yeah. He passed away not too long ago.
Yeah. You know, that happens to the best of us.
Oh, yeah. Everybody has that coming.
And the worst of us and everybody in between. Yes, go ahead.
How do you enjoy the DJI tank?
Oh, man, I love that. The RoboMaster is amazing. DJI, which makes, of course, these great drones, in China, they have a RoboMaster competition. These are programmable robots. They fire gel pellets or they have lasers, and you can steer them and you can program them. And they started selling them in the U.S. They're not cheap. They're around $500. But I got one for my son because I thought, oh, we could learn Python programming. We could have some fun with it. Instead, he just shoots the cats. But it is fun, and they're really cool wheels that slide, go sideways and stuff. I love them. I love them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Boy, good Googling Scooter X. Wow. Good Googling. There he is, proud papa, Johnny Jett.
Hello, Leo.
Brand new baby. You got two kids at home, and he still finds time to get out of the house.
I try.
He tries.
So speaking of getting out of the house, this week, the moment I saw that, actually one of my friends texted me and said, what are you going to do about your dad? I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, a hurricane's supposed to be coming.
Oh.
This was on Sunday last week.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, the storm wasn't even really really talked about it then. But sure enough, right when he told me, I went and used miles and put a flight on hold just in case it got strong.
Oh, smart.
And I think people should do the same if it ever happens again. You know, make sure you're
out of Florida, not into.
For sure.
Yes. So at what point right when the hurricane comes do they shut down flights? They probably, you know, you got to get.
Orlando Airport's going to shut down Monday night at 2 a.m., they just announced. The others haven't announced it yet that I know of, although I haven't looked in the last few hours. So what you need to do is, you know, anytime there's a storm coming, make sure you get gas right away because those lines are huge. I always have a full tank of gas anyway, just in case there's ever or not a full tank, but at least if it goes below half, I just start getting gas. I don't ever want to wait. Even when I'm not in Florida, you know, here in LA, when I was in college, the riots happened. And I just remember that was the one time I experienced something like they're experiencing now in Florida, where, you know, you have to wait an hour for gas or more and also to get groceries and water and all that stuff. So always be prepared.
Yeah. Johnny's put together a Hurricane Dorian travel resource page on his website at johnnyjett.com.
Yeah, so if you're traveling, you can click any of those airlines, and they'll show you what, you know, how you can change your tickets. You know, they're all offering fee waivers. Also, the different agencies and news. There's webcams in there. But actually, one of the most important things is this hurricane app that I know a lot of Floridians use. I mentioned it a year ago. It's called Max Tracker. It's free on iOS and Android. And this is, I think it's named after Max Mayfield, who I believe was a the former director of National Hurricane Center. And I think he might have been on the news a lot in Florida. But anyway, this app is, you know, this is what they use, according to a few of my friends who live down there. And it shows you everything, all the different possible tracks. And it's a really good resource to have if you're traveling to the tropics or, you know, where there's a storm. And it's free. So just download it and keep it. I mean, when I learned about it last year when I was in Barbados and a storm was coming. And that's when someone told me about it.
So it's not just for Florida. It's for...
No, it's for just storms. Nice. I think it's worldwide, actually. But I know, you know, Florida, Louisiana, they get the storms. They seem to get the storms the most. But it's important to know the information. Like, my sister waited to the last minute because she was taking care of my dad to get her tickets. The tickets are crazy expensive, and she's got to make multiple stops.
Doesn't that seem bad that the airlines take advantage of this?
They actually say they don't. They say they don't, and, you know, they've been called out before on this topic, but, you know, they say, you know, there's only a certain amount of fares in a certain bucket. So fares come in buckets. And so let's say seven tickets are sold, then it goes to the next fare bucket, and the higher it goes up. So they're saying it's not on purpose, but whenever a storm happens, it looks like it because everyone's buying tickets right away. So that's why I jumped on and I put my miles in, because I can change my miles last minute. I can hold them. A lot of it is because I have elite status on American, so I can change a lot and not pay any cancellation fees. But this is the time you want to have miles, period, in the bank. I always tell people, use your miles, but keep a little bit just in case there's a, you know, a funeral, a storm, whatever is going on. So you can use them and not
Why
have to
miles?
Get
miles. So just to save money, because I mean, I found that miles you often can't use miles for the flight you want.
Well, usually last minute, they will charge you more. A lot of the airlines now are allowing you to use your miles, but they're going to charge you a lot more than they normally would. So let's say, you know, a flight from Miami to New York was 12,500 miles on American, which I've actually seen sometimes 6,000. But, you know, right now they might be charging 50,000. I didn't look today, but I bought my dad a business class ticket for 25,000 miles, because, you know, he's going to check a bag. I didn't want to have to pay for check bags. I didn't have to pay for a nice seat for him. I want to make sure the guy's taken care of. He's 90 years old. So right now that 25,000 mile ticket was probably way more, because I booked this on Monday or Tuesday.
You are such a good son, man. I just hope my kids are listening. You are so good to your dad.
I'm not going to deny that.
No, it's true. I take care of the guy.
You got it. I mean, that's what, you know, he took care of me when I was a kid. I'm taking care of him now. And it's important, but.
I bet he loves it, though. Do you call him and say, hey, Dad, if you need to get out, I got a ticket for you?
Yeah, he's like, I don't want to leave.
That's the problem, is the Floridians are a tough breed. They'd say, oh, no, we're going to ride this one out.
Yeah, he didn't want to leave, but,
you're
going to
make him leave? Why
and then he left
chance?
The sleep apnea machine in one of the in the airport or on the plane, so we can't find that.
So your dad's already out? He already flew out?
Oh yeah, I got him out on Thursday.
Amazing, that's amazing. So he's with you right now?
No, he's in Connecticut with my.
Oh,
siblings.
You flew him to Connecticut? Yeah, you're not that good of a son.
Yeah, I'm not that. Here with a newborn.
I flew him to Connecticut. Just hope the storm doesn't take a left at the coastline.
Yeah.
Well, this is good. A great resource. Johnny Jet's website is really useful for all of this stuff. But particularly if you're a Floridian or you have friends or family in Florida.
And South Carolina is looking like they're going to get hit. It's starting to take a right.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't know. My sister just called me now. She's like, you know, they want to charge me $1,000 to get out tomorrow. I was like, yeah, well, you waited to the last minute. What do you think? So... But I was like, you know what? Now it looks like the storm's going to go away. I would actually maybe think about riding it out. Although it's probably not the greatest advice, because if it does turn again.
A little disclaimer here. This is a technology show. Do not take advice from either me or Johnny about what you should do for
and
a hurricane.
Medical advice. I just get destroyed.
Call your local authorities, please. Don't listen to us.
Yeah, agreed.
I would get out if it were me, personally.
Yeah, and they're worried about the storm surges, and that's
we've thought about moving to. We've thought about moving to Florida, Lisa and I, in retirement. I think it'd be really nice.
East Coast or West Coast?
I think I like the East Coast, but the thing is, which is of course a lot of hurricanes hit there. But Lisa says she's worried about hurricanes. I said, well, you know, you get warning. We'll just go. We'll go visit family if it's coming. Maybe my son will take care of me like Johnny Depp takes care of his dad. Fly him out of there.
The East Coast of Florida, South Florida, has the worst drivers in the country, period.
There you go again, Johnny, making friends everywhere you go.
You know, the Floridians will tell you that. It's true. They will definitely tell you that. I've never seen anything like it, except like in India. But it is ridiculous.
Okay, so you're saying not because of the hurricanes, because of the bad drivers.
I would move to the West Coast of Florida if I was going to go, just because it's a little bit slower and the drivers aren't as bad.
All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. You heard it here first. Johnny Jet, he's at Johnny Jet. Send your email to him there. He's on the Twitter, twitter.com/Johnny Jet. He's also on Instagram, lots of great pictures. And he's going to be pretty busy. You're probably going to suspend travel for a little bit, right, because of the newborn?
I'm not traveling for at least 3 weeks.
Nice. Well, stay home, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye, Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Take care, Johnny. I hope Olivia feels better.
Thank you. Me too.
All right. See you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
Poor Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a good song for the hurricane-ridden coast of Florida. Let's all move to higher ground. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number line for Arnie in Simi Valley, California. Hi, Arnie.
It's actually Amy.
Oh, I'm sorry. R and the M looked like an RN. Annie. Hi, Annie. Amy. Hi, Amy.
No, Amy. Hi. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
I get Arnie and Annie, and I answer to anything.
Amy.
Amy. I like it. Yes. Okay.
What can I do for you, Amy?
Well, I have a MacBook Pro. It's the first one I ever purchased, and it's about 4.5 years old, and I need a new power cord. It's starting to break at the bottom. So I was looking at the Apple website online at the price of the power cord.
Slots, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Wow.
Somehow I got distracted because I found out that I could get $775 if I traded in my laptop.
Ooh.
So my question for you is, should I wait until my laptop dies a natural death, or should I just take that decent trade in value and get a new one? And let me just say that I use my laptop for my job. So I'm on it about 3 or 4 hours a day, 7 days a week.
A lot of us kept our 2015 MacBook Pros because it was the last one with a decent keyboard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, there's a couple of things I'm going to say. First of all, many of the 2015s are being recalled. So there is an Apple website you can go to. They're having a swelling battery issue. So you want to make sure if you have a 2013 to 2015 MacBook Pro that you're not in that group. Okay. Apple has a webpage that you can go to get the serial number for the recalls. So if you Google Apple recalls, it'll probably take you right there. And they will, the name of it is the 15-inch MacBook Pro battery recall program. So you enter in your serial number and it'll tell you. And if that's the case, then you just bring it in to Apple and they will replace your battery, which is nice. Now, the other thing I would say, 2015 is not so old that, you know, it's working fine, right?
Yes.
So there's not a lot of urgency to get a new one.
Correct.
I'll tell you what you might be waiting for, what you might want to wait for. This year we expect, probably in October or November, Apple will announce a new MacBook Pro, and there'll be some differences in this one. They haven't really updated the MacBook Pro all that much in the last few years, but this new one supposedly will have a 16-inch screen in the same size body as yours because the frame around it, the bezels, will be smaller. That's nice. A little bigger screen, same size laptop. There is also a rumor that they're going to finally abandon this terrible butterfly keyboard design that they've had for the last 3 or 4 years and go back to a keyboard more like the one you've got.
Okay.
So what I would say is wait and see if they do put this new one out. And if, because you can wait, right? And if they, if they do put a new one out, it could conceivably affect the value of your trade-in. I don't know. But the trade-in is contingent on you buying a new MacBook. And I'd hate for you to buy a new MacBook now when a newer MacBook's coming out in a couple of months.
Right.
And then the thing that's really most urgent is Google the Mac 15. It's a 15-inch or is it a 13-inch?
It's a 15.
Yeah. Google the 15-inch MacBook Pro battery recall program. You'll find an Apple page where you can enter in the serial number. It'll even show you how to get the serial number of your MacBook. And just make sure that, you know, you don't have one of the ones with the batteries are going bad.
Okay.
And as for the power cord, don't buy... Now, is it... Which part of the power cord is fraying? Is it the where you plug it into the computer where the adapter is, the MagSafe adapter?
Yes, closest to the laptop itself.
So unfortunately, because of Apple's patented magnetic adapter, I don't think there are third-party versions of that. I think you have to buy it from Apple. And it is. It's like $90, right? It's ridiculous.
Yes.
It's nuts. I don't think there are going to be third-party power cords, at least not ones that I would trust, because I don't think Apple licenses his MagSafe adapter that they use. The good news is the new Mac will not be using that. It'll be using a Type-C connector, and those are generic. You can buy those cheaply going forward. Then the other suggestion, again, Scooter X, he says, now, here's a sneaky thing you can do. Go into any fancy hotel lobby and say, do you have a lost and found? I left my MacBook Pro power adapter behind. And they will have many in a box. Probably a few of mine, I might add. That's not a good idea. But you could in a pinch, you could do that.
Okay.
They have all sorts of power adapters, USB adapters. They have all cables. Anything you need, just go to a fancy hotel lobby and say, I left my there. Nice to talk to you, Amy.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah, normally the Apple rumor mill is not to be fully trusted. But as you get closer to a product like the new iPhones, which will be out a week from Tuesday, or these laptops and iPads, which supposedly seems to be are coming out in October, there is the rumors are a little better sourced because they're making them. They're manufacturing them. So the factories in China, which are a little harder for Apple to control than their own employees here in the States, often leak out that information. So I think it's pretty trustworthy that there will be this 16-inch MacBook Pro in a month or two. And, boy, I hope that rumor that they'll finally get a better keyboard in those things. Because I don't want to buy a MacBook. I really like the MacBook Air, and I did buy the new one, but that keyboard's terrible. It's terrible. Let's see. Line one, Randall in Oceanside, California. Hi, Randall.
Wait, here we go. Hey, Leo. Hi.
Hey.
Got a couple of questions for you. First of all, I think it's time to install VPNs on our devices. And so I was wondering, I wanted to ask you which one you think is the best. And I use my phone for rideshare platforms. I'm a driver.
Ah.
So I don't want it to interfere with what those are doing at all. And, when I hear the promotions, I've been hearing the promotions for quite a while for Norton VPN. But I thought you guys were saying Nord.
They are. Well, there's Nord is a very well. The two, there are two or three that I like. One's a sponsor, ExpressVPN. Very good. Nord is their direct competition. Also very good. Tunnel Bear is the one that the Wirecutter recommends. In all cases, if you, there's two reasons to use a VPN, privacy and security.
Yeah.
On your phone, while you're driving around, the only reason to use it is if you didn't trust your carrier, you thought, well, they might be seeing what I'm doing. I would not use a VPN when you're driving. Okay. I don't think there's any benefit to it for you. And you're right. It could get in the way of the Uber or Lyft software, and you wouldn't want that.
Glad I asked.
Yeah. So, but the nice thing about all of these is that in almost every case, you put an app on the phone, and it's got a button. You press a button, turns it on. Press a button, turns it off. The only place I think is really – so privacy is another issue. And if you don't trust your ISP at home or your carrier when you're on the road, yeah, maybe a VPN. It kind of obscures from them what you're doing. You know, and we do know that some ISPs sell that information to marketers. So maybe, you know, they're going to send you ads for stuff you've been looking at. That to me is not a strong reason to use a VPN. The stronger reason to use a VPN is when you're at an open access point, like at a coffee shop, or you know, as you're driving around. If you pull over and use some Wi-Fi, at that point you don't know what the security situation is, and so a VPN will protect you. But just remember, when you're choosing a VPN, all you're really doing is kicking the can down the road. The VPN provider now knows everything your ISP does, and it also, if it's not secure, you're not secure. So choose wisely. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Bad. I forgot to tell you it was going in early.
I knew.
Oh, okay.
I'm paying attention.
Our show today brought to you by my little pyramid here, my little friend. It's my Helm. I love my Helm server. Helm personal server. It started because it was an email server. See, I decided I didn't want Google to know everything I'm going on and doing. So I closed my Gmail account, and I put all my email. I was able to import all my email from my Gmail to my Helm server and run this out of the house. I got my own email server. If you've ever tried it, that's hard to do. There's a lot of reasons it's hard to do. Most internet service providers don't let you send outbound email from your personal internet connection. In many cases, Gmail, Yahoo, other mailing servers won't accept email from a personal IP address. Helm solves that in a very clever way. And man, talk about security. They do location-based authentication. Proximity-based two-factor authentication through the Helm app. That means only you can get your email. Your Helm server is always backed up with strong encryption. They send you a little USB key. You put the key in here, copy the recovery key off onto the cool-looking Helm key. They also back up your email to the Helm servers. It's encrypted, so they can't see it, but you never lose a message. And you could communicate with confidence, free from the threat of massive data breaches, corporate data aggregation, government surveillance. You know, privacy is a right, not a setting. And the Helm takes your most important information and brings it home. Now, not just email, Helm also supports Nextcloud. So you got file sync, you got file sharing, you got photo backup. You can easily upload, view, and share your files and photos securely. This is a fully private, fully encrypted alternative to Google Drive and Dropbox. I just love it. If you want to read more about how Helm works, I don't have time in limited time for an ad, but you can. There's a great article came out end of April on The Intercept by Micah Lee. He's an expert in privacy and security. He did a deep dive on how the Helm works. You can read all of that at TheIntercept.com. Setup takes less than 5 minutes. It was so easy to do. It's accessible anywhere in the world. You can have as many custom domains as you want. I've created a domain just for my Helm. You get email authentication for you geeks. You get DMARC, SPF, and DKIM. This is really important for getting email through. And it's got 128 gig solid state drive in here. And because of these Type C connectors here, you're going to be able to expand that soon to up to 5 terabytes. I just think the Helm is brilliant. Privacy is a right. Not a setting. Protect what matters with Helm. For a limited time, you get $50 off the Helm personal server by visiting thehelm.com/techguy. Thehelm.com/techguy. $50 off. If you place your order now, you can expect to get it in just a few weeks. They're catching up. You know, this has been so popular. I got mine really early on, and they're just selling them out fast. So go right now. Place your order so you can get it in the next couple of weeks. It's thehelm.com/techguy for $50 off. This is brilliant. It also looks pretty good. I like how it looks. It's kind of a little pyramid. Thehelm.com/techguy. Thank you, Helm, for making that privacy easy and affordable. Good job. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. It's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. The website is techguylabs.com. Whenever we talk about anything, we'll put the notes up there so that you don't have to write anything down. You get the links and all the information there. And we even put audio and video from the show after the fact. You have video, too, up on the website. So what is this? This is episode 1,622. So there's 1,600 episodes plus. You can even go back and see what we were talking about 15 years ago. It wasn't as interesting. It's gotten interesting. Stephen, Cranston, Rhode Island, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Leo. Good afternoon. How are you?
My pleasure. Good afternoon to you. I'm great.
That's great. Been long-time listener, fan, since you've been in the Providence market.
that actually...
Watching Twit ever since.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, my mom's still in Cranston. My sister's in Cranston.
Yeah, I think I'm not too far away from them.
You couldn't be. It's not that big a city.
Not that big.
What can I do for you?
So I normally do backups once a month in my office. I had a major Windows update a few days ago, but even more importantly, Defender found a Trojan on my computer about 2 weeks ago. I went to do a backup today. Unfortunately, my USB key isn't big enough to hold multiple backups, so I have to delete a backup to put on a new backup.
Somebody's at your door. I heard your Ring doorbell. You want to go get that?
No, I'm fine. Somebody else. I'm at the office. They're home.
Oh, good. I love that. You know, it's funny. We have a Ring. So many people have Ring doorbells now that you know that sound. When you hear that sound, I go look at my phone. Absolutely. Is somebody at my door? No, it was his. Yeah. So, you should get – don't – so a couple of things about backing up. You can always replace the backup with the next backup.
Well, I have Carbonite. I only have the one.
Yeah, I like the idea of having more than one local backup, so that if one
I have a bunch of data backups, and my business software is backed up every night.
Oh, good.
I have other solutions. This isn't my only.
I get it. So you just, this thumb drive, you want to replace your existing backup with a new
one. Just on my machine, all my documents and pictures.
Yeah.
But now, from the research I'm doing, it says I might have a virus if it cannot. So the error message I'm getting is Windows backup failed while trying to read from the shadow copy on one of the volumes being backed up.
Oh, yeah.
And all
so that could be, if so you found a Trojan, did Defender get rid of it?
Supposedly it did, yes.
Yeah. One of the things sometimes bad guys do is disable versioning. That's the shadow copy stuff. Or disable system restore points. They don't want you to be able to, go back in time to a pre-infected system. So even if you get rid of the malware, which Defender thinks it did, there still could be the side effects of the malware, things like your system restore points stopped working, your shadow copies don't work anymore, that kind of thing. So that would be my guess, is that that's what's going on.
The major update from Windows on Thursday, it wouldn't have done it.
Well, anything's possible. when these updates are so massive, I take it you got 1903 on Thursday.
Correct.
Yeah. They're so massive that, that's a big, to update an operating system that significantly while it's running.
No, I know.
Is a non-trivial thing. And while Microsoft's got it down, they do a pretty good job of it. Some percentage, whatever it is, of these fail. 0.1% would be reasonable. And yet that's like 100 million computers. That's quite a significant amount. So... yeah, it could have happened. That could have done it. I'm worried more about the Trojan, to be honest with you. Even if Defender got rid of it or thinks it got rid of it, there's no guarantee. If you got one, you could have others. Maybe one that the Defender didn't see.
And my hygiene is really good. I tried.
Oh, good man. I like hearing that. Yeah, you got a good. Sounds like you got your backup locked in.
Yeah, so in other words, I should be ordering my hard disk from Carbonite right about now.
Not necessarily. I would. It could also be that thumb drive went bad. It could be a lot of things. Have you tried a different drive?
No, I did not.
Yeah, I tried different drives. Some, you know, these things go bad. That's one of the reasons I was saying don't trust everything to that one thumb drive. It's nice to have multiple.
Right? Yeah. No, I do. And I was actually, while these backups were running, I was out in the doing another off
good man.
Line.
Good man. Yeah, and it could be that something went wrong. You know, this whole shadow copy thing, I'm not really up on it. I've never had to use it, and I don't. This is something relatively new that Microsoft added, and I'm not sure how that ties in to your backup. You're using, obviously, if you're seeing that, you're using Windows Backup, the built-in backup that came right. with Microsoft.
Yeah, Windows 7, yes.
So shadow copy or volume shadow copy is a service that runs in the background. So
now they say there are some workarounds, but I don't.
Yeah, don't go Googling around and doing things people say on the Google.
Yeah, like EaseUS.
Yeah,
for another backup solution.
That's a good backup solution. It's free. There are a lot of good backup solutions. I actually don't like using Windows Backup. I like to use a backup solution that gives me a result that I can check a little bit easier. Imaging is a great thing to do. The shadow backup is a snapshot system, and if the service isn't running, that's something that could very easily have happened with 1903. It could have stopped the service, and maybe you could just turn it on again, and everything will be fine. There's all sorts.
I'm trying to find it. I can't find it.
So you hit the Windows key,
yep,
and X at the same time, and that'll pop up a oddball menu that you don't normally see. And in there, you can see a lot of useful tools, including computer management. And in computer management, you can look at all the services that are running. You can search for that shadow copy service and make sure that that's running. If it were stopped, then that would explain the error message you're getting. And it may be that, you know, I'm sure they stop it before they apply the update in 1903 because you don't want to be making shadow copies of the old OS. So they probably stopped it and maybe didn't get turned on again. That could have done it.
So, yeah, I don't even see it in the management.
Yeah, Windows Key X.
Yeah, and management.
At the very bottom it says services and applications.
Yep.
And then if you look in services, there should be a shadow copy service. I think that's what it's called.
I see services and WMI.
Oh, yeah, I don't see shadow copy. What do they call it? Maybe volume shadow copy. That's the official name. Yeah, it's under volume. And see, on mine, it's manual. It's not running. It's you start it manually. So, and I don't even know if that's normal.
Yeah, one of the things I read said turn it to automatic.
It should be. It says if this service is stopped, shadow copies will be unavailable for backup. That's the message you're getting, and the backup may fail. If this service is disabled, any services that explicitly depend on it will fail to start. Yeah, maybe start volume shadow copy, and then see if. You don't see it?
On computer management, I have system tools.
Way at the bottom. It says services and applications, and then under that there's services.
I click on that.
Volume shadow copy. Well, maybe it got taken out. That's interesting.
Wait a minute.
Volume shadow copy. Mine's oddly not running. So I don't know. That may be why I don't ever use it.
Actually, it says running.
Okay, so that's not it then.
So it gives me an option to restart the service. Should I try restarting it?
Yeah. So the reason you need that is the other way you can maybe solve this is closing as much as possible because the problem is you can't back up a file that's in use, right?
Oh, when I back up, nothing's open.
Okay.
So I don't even use the computer. It backs up by itself.
Yeah, get another backup program. Try that. EaseUS, that's a good one for free.
Okay.
I can recommend that one. We use that one all the time.
No, really.
I'm glad you care enough to find out. That's a good thing.
Yeah, thank you. It's all because of you.
All right.
For the many years that I've been watching the Twit Network.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Nice to meet you,
Steve. We appreciate you. You do a great job.
Next time I'm out in Cranston, I'll wave.
As you go by 95, I'm looking at 95 as we
speak. I know exactly where you are. All right. Take care, Stephen. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guide. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We'll have more of your calls coming up. Now you hit the button, play the magic music, and we will take a break. And I will be back right after this word. Stay here. Everybody get up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, you can sit back down. And didn't mean to get you up. Bruce in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I was grooving to your music. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks to Big Pee-wee. He's good.
He's great. He's great.
Yep.
Hey, so I've got an older HP desktop running Windows 10 with feature update 1803, and it's tried a couple of times to upgrade to either 1809 or 1903, and it keeps failing every time and then rolls me back, which is fine. I've talked to Microsoft about it, and they say because it's an older HP desktop, the BIOS is out of date, and there's nothing really newer available. The BIOS is like from 2010. So my question is there a way that I could block 1903 from every about 10 days or so it tries to push?
That's really frustrating that it's trying to do that.
And then, you know, it tries to install, it takes a couple hours and fails and rolls me back.
So annoying. So just to let people know who are listening what this is all about, Microsoft now has set up this plan that Windows 10 is the last version of Windows, they say. And twice a year now, they're updating it with feature updates. They update monthly with security patches. Those are the most important updates, and you really want to make sure those are going through. But every 6 months or so, they'll do a big feature update. And they're going to stop doing this, but for obvious reasons. I'll explain why in a second. But the most recent ones, 1803 was March, third month of 2018. 1809 was September 2018. 1903 was March 2019. And now there'll be a new one coming out next month or the month after. That'll be, I guess, well, it's not 1909. I think they're going to call it H2, I think is what they're calling it. And then next year it'll be 20H1, first half, and 20H2. And the reason they're doing that is because they didn't want to put out Windows 2003 in the year 2020. That would just be very confusing. So they're now going to go to this H1, H2 thing. In any event, these updates are not that important, but there is a big issue that you're about to face, which is Microsoft stops supporting that version, 1803, that only has 18 months of support. So soon, 1803 will stop getting updates.
Right.
That's going to be problematic for you because, you want updates. You want those security patches. I don't care about feature updates. None of them are worth any energy. They're all silly little things, minor little details. But it is important for security to get those monthly updates. And it's my understanding that starting soon, I think the end of the year, 1803 will stop getting updates. Yikes.
Yeah, so that's a real concern. And also, I've tried, because I keep getting pushed the 1903 update, I've set the computer up for metered connection.
Yeah, supposedly, that was what I was about to tell you. Supposedly, that stops that. It doesn't, though, it sounds like. When you put on a metered connection, it still tries to update you?
No, well, it stops the feature update, but my question is, does it stop all the other updates, like security updates and so forth?
Well, that's a good question. The good news is you can force those updates even on a metered connection. The metered connection will stop the half-year, the twice-a-year update.
But, my concern is if I'm on metered connection and then
you get your security. Because, the thing you have to have is those Patch Tuesday updates every second Tuesday of the month.
Right. And if I go out and check for updates, will it try and push the feature updates?
Yes, probably.
Yeah, I'm back in that fishing cycle again.
Oh, man. That's a good question. I never thought of that. Would meter connection stop the Patch Tuesday updates? Let me check that real quickly. I think it will.
Yeah, I'm kind of in a catch-22 at that point.
Yeah, you are. Here's the real issue for you, as I mentioned. I'm just looking. The 1803, which came out spring of last year. End of service is November 12th of this year.
Oh, great. So it's like 2 months away.
Yeah. And then end of service means you're not going to get up security updates. So you're kind of up against it in one way or the other. Microsoft does have a table of issues with the updates that you might look at. So they told you you need a firmware update for your machine, and your machine is so old that it doesn't have any new updates.
They're saying I need a BIOS update, and the last BIOS update that HP indicated or issued was back in 2010.
This is such a nightmare.
Yeah.
When we were talking about this on our podcast. We have a podcast about Windows called Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. And I was telling them 2 weeks ago, I'm going to get so many calls from people just like you, stuck at 1803, can't update because their machine's too old. And now Microsoft tells them it's unsafe to use that machine.
Well, I also don't understand. It allowed me to do the feature update a year and a half ago. Back.
Yeah. What's going on?
Exactly.
Well, there are Microsoft support notes about issues with version 10. Maybe the guy you talked to at Microsoft didn't have all the details. It might be worth looking at what the blockers are, the issues that can block you from updating. Otherwise, I guess you go metered and cross your fingers or buy a new machine. Neither of those seem like good choices. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's extremely frustrating to me that Microsoft's doing this. I don't know. So if you go to Microsoft support docs, they have a list under release information of resolved issues for the various. So you can go back to, was 1803 is the last one you got? You couldn't get 1809. Is that right?
That's right.
So you can go to 1809, known issues. And then resolved issues. And I think it would be worth, maybe the guy, let's cross your fingers, the guy you talked to on the phone was wrong. You know, that may be their default, like, oh, your firmware must be out of date. It must be it.
And he actually remoted into my computer and nosed around a little bit. And that's what he told me.
So there's a lot of issues, both resolved and unknown. I mean, unfixed, known but not fixed, that can keep you from getting updated to 1809. I would really work on getting that.
Yeah, I'll check that out. I'm not in front of the computer right now.
I'll put a link in the show notes so you can go right to it for 1809. Okay. But once you're at that page, you can see other versions as well.
Right. I've even tried using the media creation tool and so forth. Same failure in updating.
Incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
It's two companies have screwed you. HP, because they stopped updating your machine. It is fairly old. I guess it's not completely unreasonable for you to say, well, a 10-year-old machine, we're not going to update it. But for Microsoft to say an 18-month-old update, now you're out of support, that's incredibly infuriating, especially since you can't apply it. You can't update it. So they're making you buy a new machine, or
I have a Chromebook that I could use, but it doesn't provide me all the capabilities I need with the Windows desktop. So.
I just don't know what the answer. I mean, I would put Linux on it myself. I would just say, "The hell with you, Microsoft." I mean, that's incredibly frustrating.
It is. All right. Well, I appreciate your help, and I thought your listeners might.
Yeah, and I'll keep. I'll ask Paul and Mary Jo on Wednesday if they have any suggestions, because I know that you're not the last one that's going to call with this.
Right. No, exactly.
I understand why HP would stop supporting a 10-year-old machine, but why has Microsoft stopped to support an 18-month-old update? That's crazy.
It's not right.
It's wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. Good luck.
Hey, my friend. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Bruce. It's nuts. And they're putting us as users between a rock and a hard place. It's a 10-year-old machine. Maybe it's time to get a new machine, I guess. I don't know. Honestly, I just put Linux on it. So there are, and J286 is mentioning one of the issues he had. There is a table. Mary Jo talked about this on Wednesday. There is a table Microsoft has published of things that can keep you from getting your update. Let me get that link too. gosh, that helped her with one of her old machines. I think she talked about it. Windows 10 release dashboard. Actually, this might be what I just posted. I think it is, actually. Let me put this. This is the more general link also in the chat room. It's the Windows 10 release dashboard. And she found this helpful to solve her problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chachi in our chat room says, it's perfectly reasonable for software to have requirements related to needing more modern hardware. Frustrating when it happens to you, but perfectly reasonable. And I agree, a 10-year-old machine, I understand why HP isn't going to release firmware updates, you know, or BIOS updates. I understand that. That's 10 years old. That's really well beyond the life expectancy of a PC. But that's not exactly the issue, because what Microsoft is saying is they were able to update that machine to 1803, but they're saying if you have 1803 on there, after 18 months, we're not going to support you anymore. I think 18 months is pretty, that's a short time frame. So yeah, it's a 10-year-old machine, but it's you know, it could be a 1-year-old machine. Well, a little longer. It could be a 2-year-old machine, and they still wouldn't be supporting it. That's frustrating. It could be security. You're right. I mean, I understand it could be security. There could be some good, compelling reasons for it. It's tempting to think, oh, it's just Microsoft trying to get you to buy, you know, a new machine, and they make money when you get that new machine on their new copy of Windows. Maybe. I do have to point out that the Linux operating system I'm so fond of, it's kept up to date by volunteers, but rarely do you see these kinds of problems. They manage somehow to keep these older machines running and keep them updated and keep them secure. They manage it, and they're just volunteers in most cases. You didn't even pay them for this. They do it anyway. I'll put a link in the show notes to the Microsoft dashboard, Windows 10 release information, that tells you all this information and more importantly, why some machines won't be updated. And maybe that'll give you some information about something you can do. You know, a 10-year-old computer probably is a good idea to buy a new computer. It's probably time, I guess. The real problem we have nowadays is that these older computers run just fine. So it's somewhat offensive, you know, to say, well, you got to spend $1,000 because you need a new computer, even though this one works perfectly fine. You have to do that for a car. Sure, 10 years old, it's probably a little long in the tooth, but it runs. It's not a security hazard, is it? John in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hello, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you, John?
I'm having a bad day.
Oh, no. What's happening?
I have an old Windows XP computer.
Well, that's...
I was using it I don't use it every day. I was using it to recover some data on a failed hard drive. So it, like, runs, took, like, 24 hours.
Yeah.
Anyway, so today I shut it down. I restarted it. It crashed. When it crashed and came back on, the desktop was completely different from 5 years ago. I've never seen this happen.
Yeah. So probably what happened, you have various profiles. Those are the things you log into. And I bet you the current profile is damaged in some way. It couldn't load it. So it loaded an older profile with your old setup on it. What is almost certainly the issue is your hard drive. As machines age, and a Windows XP machine is at least 10 years old, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, the moving parts are the ones that wear, just like humans, the moving parts are the ones that wear out. Knees, hips, elbows, in this case, hard drives. And frankly, got 10 years out of a hard drive, that's pretty good. As it starts to fail, parts of it become illegible. More likely, what's going to happen is you're going to have a non-booting system. But in this case, it sounds like the damage occurred in that profile area of the hard drive, wherever that profile was stored, and it loaded a different profile.
Well, usually profiles are stored in the user folder for the person who's logging in.
But it's not meaningful because that doesn't tell you what sector of the drive it's on. That's probably the problem is that file which lives on a certain sector, one of those sectors might be unreadable. in which case you'd get this. It could also be, have you tried logging into the other profile?
No, there's only one. There were multiple profiles on the computer previous to the crash. Now there's only one. It allows me to log in, so I can still log into the computer.
But you're getting this old setup.
All my stuff is I'm looking at the files, and I'm saying, what is this?
My suggestion at this point is, as best you can, get your data off of that drive.
There's no data on. Like I said, it's an old dog that I just use it for utility type stuff.
You could go out and buy a $50 hard drive. That'd probably fix it.
But I have to put everything back on it.
Right. So anything you want to save back up, you'd have to reinstall. Good luck finding a copy of XP.
Oh, I have that.
All right, there you go.
I mean, come on, Leo. I've been doing this for a long time.
Well, you've probably seen a few hard drives die in your time.
Oh, absolutely. But I've never seen one revert to go from something yesterday to 5 years ago.
I know, that's a little weird. But all I can think of is that the more modern up profile is damaged, right? And then it happened to find it. Sounds like more than that is damaged because you can't see any other profiles. So
just the one.
Yeah, a swath of your drive is probably unreadable. The good news is it's still bootable. That's kind of a miracle. You got to look at the bright side here. You didn't lose it all, John. You just lost 5 years' work. No big deal. And actually, it's not even that big a deal because there's nothing important on there, right?
No, the only thing important is like some of the old programs that you can't get in.
Yeah, and those are hard because you can't put a new drive in and have those working.
Can I ask you a second question?
Sure.
I have a problem with Android. I purchased a Chromebook, and Chromebook, you have to download the applications from the Google Store.
Yeah, the Google Play Store, yeah.
Here's the problem. The Google Play Store took out a bunch of things that used to be there.
Because they don't work on your Chromebook.
Well, no, they work, but I can't sideload them on the Chromebook.
No. So what they do is that's a special version of the Google Play Store for Chromebooks. They don't put everything in there. Not all those apps are going to work reliably on a Chromebook. So you do get a different version. Not all the apps will be there. You're missing apps.
So basically, I bought a Chromebook, and the app I want to use is not available.
That's too bad. Yeah, the thing is, it's running Android in emulation. So it's not exactly Android. So as a result, it can't do it. You know, sometimes it's because the screen doesn't look right on the Chromebook. Sometimes it's just things don't work. There are obviously apps that won't work well on a Chromebook because the Chromebook doesn't have GPS built into it, for instance. So the map apps aren't going to work.
All right. So
there's it's a subset of the full Play Store. That's
so
right.
On your regular phone, you can click a button and it allows you to sideload your unrecognized app.
Yeah.
Can't do it on a Chromebook.
I guess not.
Okay.
So one other thing, if you really want to try to recover this system, remember I said you could buy a new drive for $30, $40, $50. If you're willing to spend $90 on my friend Steve Gibson's SpinRite, you could run SpinRite on that old hard drive. Chances are pretty good it would be able to recover at least any sector that's readable. You understand Windows gives up too easily.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I have a copy of SpinRite.
Perfect. You're great. You're set. So you're going to want to boot into DOS. It comes with a copy of FreeDOS, I think. But you're going to want to make a SpinRite floppy, boot into it, and because this is your boot disk, you're going to be checking. Run it. It'll see your boot disk as a SATA drive in there, or probably an IDE drive on that machine, and it'll do the check and just do. You could do a lower level as you want. You can start with level 4, but if that doesn't work, you can go lower level. It's just that, remember, the lower the level, the longer it takes. But if you really want to save that drive, that's your best bet. That's your best bet. Because its whole point of SpinRite is to recover data from sectors that are hard to read. And Chumley's making a point. It's be a good time to image that disc before you run SpinRite on it, because SpinRite is going to really challenge that drive. And if the drive is on death's door, well, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wow. It's time for, yeah, you got it, the GizWiz, Mads Manistrator, Dick T. Bartolo. He's our gizmo wizard. Joins us every week to do a little disco dancing and show us some cool stuff. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
Couldn't be better. How are you?
I'm good. I have my very convenient-sized Hydralyte.
What the heck is that? Is it a flashlight?
It's the flashlight, Leo, that runs on water.
What? No.
Well, kind of. Oh, okay.
What?
I saw the ad for it. I thought, I have to buy this. So I bought one. And it comes with the power cell that you dip in water for 12 seconds or so. You put it in the flashlight. You get 100 hours of light.
That's a lot.
Yes, that's a lot. But I was talking to Chad Johnson, the co-host of the GizWiz, and he said when they were at the Brick House, he learned something that once you start a power cell, can't shut it off.
Can't stop it.
So it's a little misleading when it says 100 hours of flashlight power.
Uh-oh.
Whether you have the flashlight on or off.
Oh, so the minute you dip it, in 100 hours, it's gone.
Exactly. Mine, I kept mine on since I got it on Wednesday. I got about 64 hours out of mine. Mine is totally dead now. Now you get three dips out of this.
Three dips? So you have to re-dip the cell and get another 100 hours.
Another 100 hours, okay? Now the flashlight is right now on Amazon. It's $19.39.
See, the idea, though, that's cool is this could be an emergency flashlight because you can just leave it on the shelf. Until you dip it, the clock doesn't start, right?
That's exactly. And also, dip it in any kind of water. So if I was on the boat and I had no power,
I could
dip this in the Hudson.
Really?
Salt water.
Oh.
Dennis is suggesting gin. Because that way, after it goes out, you could suck the gin out of it, and you won't care that there's no light.
No waste. No fun. So it's a fuel cell of some kind. That's really interesting.
Exactly. Now, I'm going to send mine back because I ordered the one with the extra fuel cell for like $3 more, and they just sent the flashlight. Uh-huh. And then I found out another fuel cell is $13.
Almost as much as the flashlight itself.
Yeah. It gets up there in price.
But I think this would be good for your earthquake kit, your emergency kit, your hurricane kit, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because this was a 25-year shelf life, and you just wet it when you need to start it. And it won't matter because if you're in an emergency, even if you have 8 hours of straight light, that's perfect.
Is it pretty bright? Is it a decent flashlight?
It's decent.
It's a single LED with a big
reflector around it. And then if you pull up on it, it turns into a little mini lantern. So, I mean, it's not badly built. It's kind of, though, deceptive the way they say.
Yeah, it's not 100 hours.
It's not even 100 hours if you leave it on all the time.
Right.
But the fact that you can't stop it is... they don't even say that in the fine print.
Right.
So, but Hydralyte
runs
no
on
batteries
water.
Needed.
It is kind of cool that it runs. There's no.
Yeah.
It's cool.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Someone said, what if I'm in the desert? Well, then.
Oh, you're out of luck. Spit on it.
I was just going to say.
Get a camel.
If you have any other bodily fluid that might
Oh, God. No, no.
Who knows?
We don't know. Have you tried that? You got to try it.
No, I'm not. No, I do a lot of things for the show, but I'm not doing that.
All right. Go to gizwiz.biz, and you can find a link to this and all of the other things Dick shows on this show and the many other shows he appears on, including his own podcast, gizwiz.tv. Gizwiz.biz is the website, though. You can also go there. For this is the last day, right?
Oh, my gosh. It'll have like 8 hours or so.
The last day of the What the Heck Is It contest. It wraps up at the end of the month. And then there'll be a new one for September, October. Know what that is? Everybody knows what that is. It's a Scud missile or something.
Wow.
I don't know. Go and he's got autographed Mad magazines for the best right answers and the best silly wrong answers. And you could be in the drawing for your very own copy of the special Tarantino Time Warp issue of Mad magazine. That actually is going to be a collector's item.
It's going to be a collector's item for two reasons. It's the final issue of Mad that will be available on newsstands. And it's also special because it is the Tarantino issue.
Yeah. Wow. It's kind of the end of an era. Wow. Makes me sad.
They'll still be Mads, but just two subscribers.
I think
in some form.
I think some white knight is going to come along and save Mad magazine. So many people love Mad magazine. It'd be a shame to lose it.
That's true. That's true.
A cultural phenomenon. And this guy's been writing for him for five decades straight, every single issue. Your streak's going to be broken. But not by
once
you.
Once they turned me on, I couldn't be stopped.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, every issue for 52 years.
That's amazing. That's just amazing. Thank you, Dickie D. Giz.
Okay, buddy, see you next week.
See you next week. Oh, man, it makes me sad to think of Mad Magazine going away. It just really breaks my heart. Let's see if we get one or two more calls in before. I got a couple minutes left before the end of the show. Line two, August, Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, August.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. So my parents are having their 50th wedding anniversary here
soon. Oh, congratulations. That's nice.
I'm thinking I want to get them a digital photo frame.
Oh, yeah.
They are local, so it's something that I can go to their house and set up. They do have Wi-Fi, but I want it to be easy for my sister and me to be able to change those pictures. Wondered if you had any suggestions.
Yeah, my favorite photo frame is actually fairly new. It's from Google. It's they call it the Nest Hub, and there's going to be a Nest Hub Max in a month, but that may be too late for you. I have this on my bedside table. It will give them a couple of things. First of all, they'll get a nice photo frame that picks the photos from Google Photos. So you don't even have to go over to put new photos, nor does your sister. You'll just have a shared folder, put photos in it. It'll automatically show up on mom and dad's screen. It rotates through them. You set how often it goes by. I have mine set for 1 a minute, but you could set it faster or slower. And you're giving them something more than just a hub, just a photo frame, because it's also Google Voice Assistant. So they can use it to play music. They can use it for alarms, for timers. They can use it to call you. You can use it to call them. And it's $99. I think it's an amazing deal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If you go to store.google.com and you look, they call it they changed the name to the Nest Hub fairly recently. One of the other things I like about it, it does not have a camera on it. So they can put it anywhere they want without worry about privacy. There's a mute button. If they don't like it, that it's listening, they can press the mute button. It won't be listening. So that's up to them. But I think it is a great gift. It's a smart photo frame plus. The only thing is it's a little smaller maybe than you might think. That's why they're doing a max in the next month or so. I think it comes out in a couple of weeks. You could play videos on it. You could play YouTube videos on it, songs. I really like it. Hey, Walmart has an even better deal on it. So check out Walmart. You can get to see the size that way, too. Thanks so much to Big Pee Wee for the musical direction here. To Nicole DJ, our DJ, for answering the phones. And thanks to you for being here. We are, I'm sad to say, out of time for the day. But I'll be back tomorrow. So will Nicole and Big Pee Wee and Laura, too. And I hope you'll come back. We could talk tech. I'll answer some calls. We'll have some fun. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I hope you had a good time. Don't forget our website, techguylabs.com, is there Monday through Friday, Monday through Sunday, right? All week long. All the answers to all the questions are up there. Audio and video from the shows, too. Techguylabs.com. And there's no sign up for that. It's absolutely free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.